Les colloques du Collège de France.
Hello, thank you. Before I begin, I'd just like to thank Céline, Caroline, and Oho for the invitation to continue this conversation here. And I'd especially like to thank all of you for your indulgence and generosity in allowing me to present in English. I appreciate it immensely. I'm Shelley Rosenblum. I'm curator of academic programs at the Morrison Helen Balkin Art Gallery, which is an academic gallery at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. My role there is to develop research, pedagogy, learning, experience that speaks to the mandate of an academic gallery, a university gallery, which I think is kind of a separate niche sort of thing, but also to help advance the mandate and mission of the university. So to try to understand that, what that means, and to invent ways to do that. So the example of that I'd like to speak with you about today is a large research project called Ars Scientia. And it's a collaboration among the Balkin Gallery, the Department of Physics, and the Quantum Matter Institute. And it's a very large and ongoing network and platform where we do all sorts of things. We develop courses, we have symposia, we have film and lecture series, we have dinners, but we also have Quantum Studio, which is an annual month-long, the first one was 6 months and all subsequent have been month-long artist residencies. Now they are, it's supported by the French consulate in Vancouver, and we are lucky enough to invite a French artist for 1 month every year to be embedded at the Quantum Matter Institute and to develop a project in tandem with one or more physicists there, hosted by the Balkin Gallery. So you've heard about Quantum Studio quite a bit today because we are lucky enough to have last year's resident in the room with us, Caroline, and you just heard from Nadia, this year's resident who just arrived last week. So I'm going to talk a bit about the larger philosophical, methodological context of that, and then speak to two examples prior to the ones that you've heard that are still projects in development that continue to evolve, but I think they really serve as salient case studies for what we're talking about today. This is the Balkin. When we bring artists and quantum physicists into conversation, we do more than juxtapose two disciplines. We stage an experiment in how knowledge itself is made and unmade. We are testing the limits of how knowledge itself is produced, of what it means to observe, to interpret, to represent, and to imagine the world. Over the last two decades, collaborations between artists and scientists have become increasingly visible. Yet quantum physics presents a particularly charged and generative case. Its conceptual foundations, uncertainty, entanglement, the role of observation, are as much philosophical and poetic as they are mathematical. To engage artists in this terrain is to invite them into a space already rife with metaphor, paradox, and indeterminacy. I've removed the technical images. We've seen a lot about apparatuses. So I'm going to focus on the kind of photographs I took during the tours with residents that of objects that sparked a lot of discussion and seminar. An artist residency at a quantum institute doesn't simply produce artworks inspired by science. It stages an experiment in epistemology. What happens when aesthetic inquiry and scientific method share the same laboratory? How might artists and physicists together reimagine what counts as evidence, as experiment, as discovery? One of the most striking affinities between quantum theory and contemporary art lies in the shared engagement with uncertainty and the act of observation. If in quantum physics the observer is no longer external to the system, measurement alters what is measured. In contemporary art, the viewer's encounter is equally constitutive. The meaning of a work often emerges through perception, context, and participation rather than through fixed form. Both domains then trouble the Enlightenment fantasy of detached observation. They ask, can we know something at all without changing it? Can we describe reality without intervening in it? When Niels Bohr described the complementarity of wave and particle, he offered a framework for understanding phenomena that refused to be captured by a single image. Contemporary artists operate similarly, refusing to stabilize meaning, allowing contradictory readings to coexist. In this sense, the artist and the quantum physicist share a methodological posture, an attentiveness to the limits of representation and willingness to dwell in indeterminacy. The language of uncertainty in physics finds an unexpected resonance with the aesthetics of ambiguity in art. While physics often begins from theory and formalism, it remains grounded in material experimentation. So too, the contemporary is deeply experimental, though its laboratories may be studios, archives, public spaces. In both fields, experiment is not only a means to an end, but a conceptual structure. The artist studio and the physicist lab are sites where materials resist, surprise, speak back. Both practices rely on intuition, chance, and failure as engines of discovery. When artists enter quantum laboratories, their interventions often draw attention to the conditions of the experiment, the tools, the metaphors, the infrastructures of measurement. Artists make visible the aesthetic and ethical dimensions of scientific practice, the beauty of precision, the fragility of data, the choreography of collaboration. Conversely, physicists exposed to artistic approaches often rediscover the poetics within their own work, the elegance of equations, the visuality of models, the strangeness of phenomena that defy intuition. At best, the residency becomes a catalytic zone of mutual reenchantment. So I'm going to talk about two projects from within Arciencia that illustrate the generative tension between artistic and scientific ways of knowing. The first is a collaboration with Josephine Lee, who's a Vancouver-based sculptor and installation and performance artist, and Daniel Korchinski, who they were both PhD students at the time. He's now in Lausanne on a postdoc. He works on amorphous solids, avalanches, and quantum cartography. And the second example will be with two Vancouver-based artists, one who deals with photographic archive and installation, one who's a choreographer who focuses on the social structure of the everyday, and a physicist who works on atomic, molecular, and optical physics. So we'll start with this one. Both projects interrogate the politics and aesthetics of visibility, albeit from different positions. One through the experimental optics of glass, and one through the archival traces and past observation in a curatorial act of care. In this project, Josephine Lee explores glass as both material and metaphor for the complex relations between fragility, visibility, and resistance. The project evolved through months of interdisciplinary dialogue where experimental physics met critical theory and material poetics. Glass, as Josephine describes it, glass, as the artist describes it, occupies an indeterminate state, neither liquid nor solid, both transparent and opaque, strong and fragile. This ambiguity serves as both a scientific puzzle and an artistic provocation. The duo's investigation began with an interest in the physical properties of glass, its atomic structure, its behavior under stress, its optical capacities, and gradually expanded into an inquiry into what glass does socially and politically, how it mediates perception, constructs forms of visibility, and by extension, participates in the dynamics of surveillance and control. The Prince Rupert's drop became an emblematic object for their research. This phenomenon, a teardrop of glass formed by quenching molten material in cold water, embodies a structural paradox. Its bulbous head can withstand extreme force, while its tail, if snapped, triggers an instantaneous and total shattering. Under polarized light, these internal tensions become visible as bands of color, an invisible fragility made momentarily legible. For Josephine and Daniel, these unseen stress patterns suggested the border systems of pressure, social, optical, political, that organize what is visible and what remains hidden. The pair first worked closely with a local glassblower in a studio and then captured high-speed footage of the Rupert's drop and explosion at the Vancouver General Hospital in the spinal cord lab. The footage offers not only empirical data, but also a visual metaphor for the social and epistemic pressures contained within seemingly stable materials. Through material experimentation, the artist began to undo the lens, to render its precision dysfunctional. Instead of magnifying and clarifying, their sculptural and optical works blur, distort, and refuse the desire for transparency. They proposed what Simone Brown calls a, quote, black luminosity, where refusal itself becomes a strategy of illumination. In the text, Dark Matters on the Surveillance of Blackness, Brown shows how surveillance technologies have historically targeted racialized bodies, while Ruma Benjamin's Raced After Technology extends this critique to contemporary algorithmic systems that replicate bias under the guise of neutrality. Both authors reveal that visibility is not an uncomplicated good. It can be coercive, extractive, and disciplinary. Josephine's work actively participates in the lineage of feminist, postcolonial, and critical race theory that reimagines opacity as a right. Edward Glissant's Right to Opacity, the refusal to be fully known or legible within dominant systems, resonates powerfully here. For Glissant, opacity does not mean obscurity, but the preservation of relational complexity that resists reduction. In this sense, the artist's attempt to create what they call lenses that don't work becomes a poetic and political gesture, a reconfiguration of glass from instrument of surveillance to material of refusal. By situating this inquiry within a quantum research context, Josephine and Daniel also gesture towards the physics of indeterminacy, where observation itself alters the observed. The project becomes an experiment in the ethics of seeing, where visibility is never neutral and transparency is never innocent. Their work challenges both scientific and artistic conventions of clarity, proposing instead a relational mode of attention that values concealment, instability, and unknowability. Glass here functions not simply as medium, but as method, a way of thinking through tension, refraction, and the instability of knowledge. As a practice situated between art and science, the project demonstrates how material experimentation can become theoretical and how refusal can open a space for new epistemologies of care and resistance. And I should say that Daniel made a discovery about avalanches through seeing the video of explosion at the spinal cord imaging, which is so quick, and that's what his postdoc research is on. So I think for both of them, that was kind of a best case scenario for us when something radical happened differently for the collaborators in not one direction. And the glassblower was delighted with the project. I'll just toggle through to show some of the pieces, the kind of pieces she's working on now. Okay, happy to talk more about this project, but I'm going to go on to the second project with the artists Kelly Lycan and Justine Chambers in collaboration with Kirk Madison called Gazing, Not Solving. This sketch comes from the first cohort group was six artists with many physicists who competed for the privilege of being able to work in a collaboration with artists. And we had a seminar every 3 weeks for those 6 months. We didn't have the funding to have a cohort model after this, but that group really appreciated the seminar because we had to determine whether the lexicon we shared indexed the same concepts at all. And she managed the way through the seminars by sketching, which became a fundamental tool for a lot of the physicists. And the sitting with the gazing, not solving, became kind of a mantra for the group together, that where those occlusions of communication weren't a breakdown, but a place to sit with the gazing, and that was enough just to find the either communication or understanding in what seemed limited otherwise. While Josephine and Daniel's work unfolds within the laboratory, Kelly and Justine's contribution to our ciencia engages the laboratory's residues, its images, documents, and memory. The project began with an existing photographic archive rescued from the trash heap by physicist Kirk Madison. He found it in the office he was given when he came for his doctoral work. The collection, originally produced by Andrew Eng, a laser plasma researcher, comprises Polaroids, index cards, and documentation that once served as technical data within a laboratory. Kirk salvaged the boxes, later realizing their provenance and historical importance, and then went back and also interviewed Andrew Eng, who thought all of this had been tossed out. This became a really important image for the artist because of the houseplants there. Removing the boxes from the laboratory and into a domestic space ended up being a radical for the artists. Kelly brought this archive into her studio and treated it as both material evidence and conceptual prompt. She hosted sessions where artists and guests looked through the images together, reading and viewing as a collective practice. Working with a choreographer, Justine Chambers, she approached the archive as something that could be reanimated through movement, conversation, and curatorial framing, rather than through the production of new photographic work. The project, Gazing Not Solving, envisions the archive as a shared platform for invited respondents. Each would engage with a rescued material. Oscilloscope photographs, microscope images, experimental notations, and Polaroids showing the trace of research and develop their own creative or scholarly responses. The archive's material state, fading emulsions, chemical edge effects, the traces of time and handling, embodies its own history of transformation. There's the Eng. By attending to these changes, Kelly repositions the archive as a living entity rather than a static record. The project reframes the scientific image as both evidence and aesthetic object, foregrounding how disciplinary boundaries determine the value of images. The act of rescue is central here. As Derrida observes in Archive Fever, every archive is founded on both preservation and violence, the power to keep and the power to exclude. To rescue isn't to intervene in that dynamic, to recognize that what is saved is shaped by the conditions of its saving. This approach acknowledged the contingency of the archive's survival and the ethical responsibility of its representation or representation. By reframing these images within an art context, the artists expose their aesthetic and epistemic doubleness. They are both data and composition, record and image. This curatorial practice cultivates what might be called a slow gaze, a mode of attention that neither appropriates nor instrumentalizes its object. In hosting the archive, the artists also stage a dialogue between artistic and scientific temporalities. Science often seeks reproducibility and progress. The archive, by contrast, accumulates and decays. This project refuses to reconcile these timescales. Instead, it acknowledges their friction. Their way past observation haunts present understanding. And here I'm reminded of Benjamin's dialectical image. Importantly, this engagement with the archive also addresses the institutional dimension of knowledge production. The images oriented within a university laboratory, their rescue and originated. Their rescue and recontextualization by an art institution, an active form of institutional reflexivity. They reveal how universities, as sites of both scientific and artistic inquiry, generate and discard their own visual epistemologies. Gazing, not solving, thus becomes a meditation on what kinds of images universities preserve and what they let vanish. The title itself, Gazing, Not Solving, encapsulates the project's epistemic ethic. The gaze, in this context, is not to consume, but to attend, not to solve, but to dwell in unknowing. This practice affirms the value of non-resolution as a mode of respect. In this sense, it parallels Josephine and Daniel's refusal of visual mastery. Both projects insist that not everything that can be seen should be made legible, and that opacity has its own dignity. In these two projects, exploration of optical attention and curatorial care for the photographic archive exemplify the generative possibilities of our Ciencia. Both projects transform the relationship between art and science from one of translation to one of entanglement. They do not merely illustrate scientific ideas, but participate in the production of knowledge, testing how matter, image, and ethics cohere. In each, something new is produced, not a hybrid artifact, but a shift in epistemic terrain. Observation becomes relation, visibility becomes ethics, the laboratory becomes a co-laboratory. The collaboration itself becomes a medium, a quantum field in which matter, meaning, and care are inseparable. Thank you.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.